world tomorrow. As recorded before a live audience in a nationwide speaking campaign, Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The United States of America doesn't seem to realize that we live in a world filled with tigers, that we are the most unpopular people in the entirety of the world, that anti-Americanism is like a disease that has found its way into every major country on the face of the earth, that even our allies in Europe have deep and abiding suspicions and problems involving our people, our leadership, and our basic way of life. In the ninth verse of this 59th chapter, therefore is judgment far from us, neither does justice overtake us. Now look at the American public, the electorate, and they are expecting and they are hoping and they're cheering, and you will see people will gather, the workers that have been out there trying to get out the vote for a favored candidate, as they did when Governor Reagan lost down there in the Republican convention. And they will absolutely just be standing there sobbing and bawling because they wanted so much this one individual to get into office, because what they looked for and what they were waiting for, they knew they would have. We'd have a bright new world tomorrow. Everybody that wanted anything would get what they wanted. The poor people would get more money and the rich people would get less money. And the rich people that were getting tax loopholes would have all the loopholes closed, and the little people who were being taxed too heavily would have less taxes. We would be number one and strong in the world, but we would cut defense spending. We would have all the food programs and the national social and welfare and health and insurance programs, but at the same time, we'd have less government bureaucracy. And we wait and we expect and we hope, and a year later, 2 years later, the American public will find out, well, nothing's changed very much. Everything's pretty much the same. We found out that the new government is kind of pushed along by a lot of forces already set in motion and isn't really doing all the things that we'd hoped they would do. This scripture says we wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. Let me tell you something, and I'm going to make another prediction, just like I did at the time in the early 70s about drought. If we don't see another beginning recession right away this year, it will come no later than 1979. I absolutely, verily believe. Is the Bible wrong to say we are sick? Well, that's gloom and doom. That's bad news. We ought to talk about what's right about America. We don't have cancer. We don't suffer from heart disease. We're not a sick society. We're not eating prepackaged, pulverized, processed, white sugared starch foods with artificial coloring and dyes and flavors and chemicals in them. We don't have 4 million with diabetes, 5 million plus with ulcers, 2 million with epilepsy, 1.5 million with Parkinson's disease, or 500,000 with multiple sclerosis. Oh, yes, we do. Those are AMA statistics. 300,000 under treatment for tuberculosis. And over 10 million Americans with venereal disease. And gonorrhea, which is most cases of VD, there are 2.5 million new cases every year, with one new infection every 15 seconds in the United States. And when the health department up in the San Francisco Morro Bay area asked some of the hippies living in their communes to just leave it alone for a while so they could treat them for some of these hideous new strains that were proving to be untreatable by even some of the so-called new miracle drugs, penicillin, of course, and others, the hippies said no. We don't like to be told that we are a nation that is going in the wrong way, not going in the way of peace, but it happens to be true nevertheless. Now, paradoxically, and let me tell you a real paradox, because that's the way I look at it, over in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, I'm a very firm believer in the fact that if Noah had been able to preach to those people after only half of the flood, he would have had one attentive audience. I really think he would have had their attention. If he could have just pulled that ark around from mountaintop to mountaintop where the survivors of half the human race were after God caused the rain to stop after only 20 days and 20 nights. People have been saying, amen, Noah, that's right. No problem at all. They would have listened. I'm a firm believer in the fact that back during the days of World War II, when my father was preaching over the radio and he saw the armies of Hitler going throughout the entirety of the world, it seemed, the Japanese very quickly, after December 7, 1941, carved out a whole Pacific empire. The Marshalls, the Gilberts, the Solomons, the Philippines, Wake, Guam. They took all of what we call Indochina, clear down to Malaysia, the Malayan Peninsula, the Dutch East Indies, a vast, huge empire where it looked like they were swallowing up the entirety of the world. They came all the way to Papua in New Guinea, looking over the mountaintops toward Port Moresby, and bombed Darwin from Timor. We learned later what a big battle Midway really was and what a turning point it was. But I, as a boy, had been aboard the California, the Oklahoma, the Nevada. I'd gone up to Bremerton, Washington, and seen the entire might, all those great big old ships. You've seen that classic picture, all of them lined up, where we had that big stick policy way back during the days of Teddy Roosevelt and afterward, and in World War I, when the United States, just during and after that war, built up one of the biggest navies the world had ever seen. I was very mightily impressed to be taken down into the gun rooms and go through those turrets and see a 16-inch shell that was bigger than I was. And to see the way I didn't know. I'd learned then when I was a boy of about 9 or 10 that they had these great big canvas bags. I didn't know that's what guns were like. I didn't know they took a great big shell and shoved it in there and then started heaving big canvas bags after it. I thought it was like fixed ammunition, but it wasn't. But I saw those huge battleships. And when I learned that a lot of them were damaged and several of them were sunk, of course they raised some later, and the Arizona is still there, with people still aboard it as a national shrine now, where they are forever sealed there. You know, it was quite an interesting audience that we had in 1942, in February, 43, even before the Battle of the Bulge, when over 11 million people were dying, when the entirety of the world was in a global struggle. But today, it's different, isn't it? We don't have nuclear overkill. People are jaded, they're exhausted, they're tired. There's nothing to get too excited about because right now the United States is at peace. Young Americans are not dying on the battlefield. Oh, the North Koreans can come down and chop the heads off with an axe of a couple of our officers, but we can stand that. I mean, we just send the bodies back to the bereaved families and then say nasty things and pass a nasty note and say, you dirty North Koreans, and let it go at that. But nevertheless, we don't have young Americans dying on far-flung battlefields today. And so there's a paradox. We happen to be living, I believe, in one of the most dangerous times in the history of humanity. And we, as the American people, were looking at the vying back and forth for office of not just the most powerful office in the United States, but the most powerful office on the face of the earth, with the destiny of humanity hanging in the balance. I have to wonder, is this the last president of the United States? Or do we have another administration to go and yet another? But I'll guarantee you one thing. I do not believe the next generation is going to come along to be your age with the United States of America living in a world of peace. I don't believe we've got 15 or 20 more years to push the future out of our minds and think about security and homes and jobs and businesses and vacations and all the family things that we tend to think about. There's a parable that Jesus gave, beginning in Matthew 24 and verse 32. Even when you see a fig tree putting out new leaves, you know that summer is near. So likewise you, when you shall see all these things. And what did he say? Nation against nation, wars and rumors of wars, drought, famine, disease, and eventually religious persecution. And we're seeing racism and race war, and nation after nation not growing toward democratic institutions, not freeing its citizens, but even those nations which had certain measures of freedom, like the 619 million people of India, having them taken away and instead being forced back into a dark age where they are not free and are not living under free conditions in a free society. When you shall see all these things, know that it, that is, these great interventions of God and what he calls the great tribulation and eventually the second coming of Christ, you know then that it is near even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation, I take that to mean the generation that is alive at the time when these things happen. All of them overlapping, building up, coming to a head at the same time. No, he said, during that generation, all of these things are going to be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. It's amazing to me how people get angry at Christ, and then they're willing to forgive him, that there are religions, organized religions, that don't like those words. They don't like to hear that Christ is going to come again, and that he's coming as a conquering king. I remember one very famous religionist who put out a steady stream of booklets and articles and all that type of religious paraphernalia, and he said, "Oh, I just can't think of Jesus Christ as a conquering king coming to make war." The poor man had never read the 19th chapter of Revelation. He'd never read what it says he's going to do to the beast and the false prophet, grab him by the nape of the neck and take him to a cliff and throw him into a fire. He's never read what Jesus Christ says about treading the grapes of the winepress of the wrath of God. He never read about the conquering king that Jesus says he is. But verse 36 says, "Of that day and hour knows no man, no, not the angels of heaven." Can you imagine that? Now, angels are supposed to be very intelligent. They're supposed to be able to even read human minds. They're supposed to be able to know because they can see through walls and they can visit the Kremlin and national capitals. And they can know and to understand all the conditions in the world long before Associated Press or Reuters or UPI gets a hold of it. And yet even they don't know when Jesus Christ is going to come. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were. Now, how were the days of Noah? Well, he said that's the way the days of the coming of the Son of Man are going to be. For in the days of Noah, before the flood, verse 38, they were eating and drinking. Doesn't necessarily mean they were banqueting and overdoing it. Eating and drinking is all it says. Marrying and giving in marriage. Now, when you give in marriage and you marry, that means you're planning for the future, doesn't it? You're setting up a home. You're expecting to establish a home and to have children, have a family. When dad takes the girl and marches down the aisle and gives, as it says, in marriage, he's thinking, boy, we're going to have our family's growing and we're not, you know, the old saying they always say, we're not losing a daughter, we're gaining a son. And they're thinking about where these kids are going to live, and they're expecting grandkids to come along. They were planning for the future. They didn't think any hideous thing was going to happen, but Noah had told them what was going to happen. Noah had been preaching. He was called a preacher of righteousness. He had been preaching God's law, God's word, and the prophecies about what was going to occur because of the savagery of the world of that time. And you can prove that cannibalism was very extant on the earth prior to the flood. And it said they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. That's strange, isn't it? The Bible says they knew not, and yet the Bible says that Noah was a preacher of righteousness and was telling them what was going to happen. But they didn't hear it, went in one ear and out the other. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, you don't believe that. In your heart of hearts, you don't really believe that. Oh, you think you do. But no, you believe a lot of things have got to happen. Many prophecies have got to fall in place. A lot of things have got to happen in Europe. Things have got to happen in the Middle East, in Rome, in Jerusalem, right? Of course. And we know what the pattern is. Why, one event has to occur, and then another event, and then that's followed by the third event. And after that happens, we probably still got a year, and then we can really bear down and get ready, because Christ is probably going to come. But you know, the Apostle Paul said, "As for prophecies, they shall fail." And it makes me wonder, because living in a world where it is possible that someone can reach out and press that nuclear button. No such magical button exists, of course. It just has to do with a red phone in government who probably gets a hold of some strategic command somewhere in the military, and that would be the key or the trigger that would launch some kind of a nuclear strike. But we live in a day now where even nuclear hijackings are possible, where war could be joined between the nuclear superpowers by accident, where the areas of the world that are so volatile and so heavily now militarized, such as the Middle East in particular, you just can't. I don't believe it. You can go on in a garage waiting in an inch of gasoline, and you can go around banging around in there, making sparks off metal and smoking a cigarette in a closed garage with all that gasoline around without catching fire to something sooner or later. Any more than I believe we can deliver hundreds upon hundreds of F-14 fighters and F-4s and F-16s to all the nations of the Middle East. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iran, Kuwait, and some of the others down there, and now Egypt and Israel, or that the French can do that, and the British can do that. That is the most militarized part of the world for its size today. And those people hate one another. Now, how long do you think the world is going to go along without another round of war in the Middle East? Tomorrow, next week, next month, you couldn't gamble on any of those very short lengths of time. It could happen any time. The Jewish government sure didn't know it was going to happen. The Israeli government back on Yom Kippur in 1973. But it did on the Day of Atonement. They were caught by surprise. And the armies of Sadat broached the Suez Canal and the Bar-Lev line. And the Arabs bought back a little bit of pride. And then eventually we got a kind of an interim peace accord, and some American civilians were over there at the listening post. The Israelis gave up the Gideon and Mitla passes and are back in the Sinai a little further than they used to be. And so we think we have a little bit of temporary peace in the Middle East. But today it is far different than it was back during World War II. Do you know that every age in all of history thought itself unique? You know that when they approached the year 1000, they thought the second coming of Christ was near? Do you know that even at the fall of ancient Rome, that the writer Tertullian said, and I quote, "We know that a mighty shock is impending over the whole earth, in fact, the very end of all things. Dreadful war." The very end of all things, Tertullian, in the days of the Roman Empire, predicted. Because they saw the permanence of that vast empire, Pax Romana, the trade that went all the way circumnavigating Africa to the Far East and clear up to the Cornwall tin mines in England, and they had a wonderful, marvelous, fabulous society. To think that that could come apart, that these Vandals and Heruli and Ostrogoths and Visigoths and Goths and some of these barbarian tribes that didn't have their civilization, their art, their language, their architecture, their music, that didn't have their religion, that were just barbarians, savages, could bring Rome to its knees? You can go and see the rubble. You can go and look at the old artifacts. You can go and listen to the wind blow through the old columns where they've been blown down in all the centuries that have gone by. But Tertullian began to believe that that had to be the end of the world. Rome fell, and Christ didn't come. I imagine the Apostle Paul, because you can read that he thought Christ was going to come before he was dead, could see many things happening that made him think the end of the world was nigh. At the Black Death in Europe, the bubonic plague that killed so many millions in England, they thought it was the end of the world and Christ would soon come. During the medieval wars, they thought so. At the development of mechanized warfare, they thought so. Preachers in this country said World War I was the end of the world. And in 1939, and 40 and 41, there was a preacher up in Eugene, Oregon, that was on a little radio station preaching that the end of the world was nigh, because he read in the Bible about a great battle that was going to take place in the Middle East. Now, the only thing he had to go by was the fact that about 11 million people were dying, that all of Europe had been brutalized by the Nazi armies, and that Rommel's Africa Corps was inside Egypt within sound and sight of the city of Alexandria. All he had to go by was the fact that already Japanese bombers had reached Rangoon and even Calcutta in India. All he had to go by was the fact that if India fell, the last bastion of British defense in that area, including the Indian Ocean, had gone. The Prince of Wales and Repulse, the two great modern battleships, had been sunk off Malaysia, which is called today Malay Peninsula, by Japanese aviation, which was the first in modern history when great battleships had been sunk by aerial bombs. And the entire world was at war. He knew that it said a great beast power that was supposed to be a resurrection of an ancient Roman Empire was to come into the Middle East, a king of the north, and that the land of Egypt would not escape. He could read that in Daniel 11. And that many countries would be overthrown. And here were the guns blasting within sight and sound of the city of Alexandria. And so just like Tertullian, and just like those in the days of William Miller who even set dates, and just like those who at the days of the Industrial Revolution, the American Revolutionary War, and the American Civil War predicted it was the end of the world, my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, was telling people that if the armies of Hitler and the armies of Japan unite in the Middle East, then that is the beginning of the Battle of Armageddon, and Jesus Christ is going to come, and the end of this age, not the world, not every person on it, but the end of this age as we know it, is nigh. Now, I guess he could have given up when he saw El Alamein occur, the armies there of Field Marshal Montgomery turned back the Nazis in North Africa. But he didn't. He said Germany is going to rise again. By the end of the Battle of the Bulge in 1944, while German cities were still being pounded to rubble, he was saying Germany's going to rise again. After the war, he kept preaching Germany's going to rise again. People traveled to Germany and they said never. Not in 1,000 years. Sir Winston Churchill said not in 50 years. Let's see, what's the date? Has anybody taken a look at what happened in Germany in the last decade or two? Germany is now a stronger economy than the United States. Germany is now the strongest nation in Europe. Germany is one of the strongest nations on the face of the earth. Their technology is excellent, their industry is fabulous, and their military is strong and growing stronger. He said the Nazis would go underground. He said eventually the same system would make a comeback. He began to say Mussolini couldn't have been the last one. There's got to come yet another super military figure in Europe. And we've been preaching that and still believe it and still expect it. And yet I begin to grow a little apprehensive because it says, as for prophecies, they shall fail. And we have this timetable we think is going to work. Militarization, a union of 10 nations in Europe, the moving of a vast, powerful, political, and religious figure into the Middle East, into the streets and the cities of the city of Jerusalem, and eventually a great East-West war. Growing internal problems in the United States and eventual war involving the United States, in which we don't come out the best, but a very poor second best. But as for prophecies, they shall fail. And it says here in this 24th chapter of Matthew, women are out doing normal things that women do, shopping, grinding, cooking, eating, whatever, and one is taken and one is left. And he says in verse 42, watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and not suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, verse 44, be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. Now, I would hesitate to say this because it seems too dangerous. But I don't think he's coming between now and the end of the next hour. Do you really, in your heart? But there's a difference between saying that and saying what it says here in verse 48. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord, delay his coming. He keeps putting it off. Probably not coming at all. 10, 15, 20 years, the rest of my lifetime. I'm like old King Hezekiah. He said, well, as long as I can have peace in my lifetime, forget about the kids. Forget about what happens in the next generation. And in addition to that, shall begin to live like an animal, carnally, shall begin to smite his fellow servants, to eat and to drink with the drunken. The Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint his portion with the hypocrites, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. But to me, a commission that is incumbent upon God's work is in verse 46. Blessed is that servant whom and his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. Doing what? All you're told to do is two things in this chapter. To watch, and then, it says, to be ready. To watch and to be ready. Blessed is that servant whom when his Lord comes, he shall find so doing. Not waiting on the rooftop, clad in white. Not saying, well, it's probably not going to happen for another decade or two. But saying, prophecies can be cut short. It could happen any time now. I really do believe that in the event political conditions so deteriorate that we would be plunged into a nuclear war, it would hasten, it would shorten, it would bring about that event even years earlier than might normally be really intended in the plan of God. But the paradox is, as you follow on reading the 25th chapter, that at the very time when God's church is admonished to be the most alert, the most awake, and the most aware, is the time when they are going to be the most asleep. Isn't it funny? You read in the Bible and read in the book of Revelation and all the churches and so on, and you'll find out that the sleepiest time for the church is the most critical time. Now, isn't that unbelievable? But it really is true. That is biblical doctrine. The most critical time is the time when the church is pictured as being the sleepiest of all. It is the most difficult for people to remain alert, awake, and aware. The three A's that I wanted to leave you with at the end of this message. I believe that that ought to be something that we ought to think about and give you a little bit of a slogan because it helps you remember if you have a slogan, maybe. The three A's that I think we ought to really concentrate on in God's church. To be awake, to be alert, and to be aware. Highly sensitized to what is going on around us. With our conscience very, very tender, and our senses very alert to what is happening in the world, and very aware about world conditions, watching and knowing that we're living in a time where unbelievable, sudden, shocking things can happen. When a great depression occurs in this country, it will happen in less than 3 months' time. In 90 days, the entire American affluence could become impoverished. That is a fact you may as well face it and be aware of the fact that it would only take 3 short months for this country to come down on its knees economically in the same conditions we found ourselves in 1929. It could happen really even faster because the balloon is bigger and is inflated more artificially than it was even then. And we could be reduced to a barter economy where you trade one item for another and where your money is worthless. The government could tell you to turn in every $100 bill for a $1 bill and every $1 bill for a penny. That could happen, and it could happen in less than 90 days from the time we're talking about it right now. That's how shocking it can occur. So he says, "Be ye also ready, for you know not in what hour your Lord will come." Now, it would be melodramatic of me to say, "Are you ready?" I might as well ask myself that question. And the answer, no. I don't think so. Matter of fact, I'd almost be afraid to get into a condition where I said yes, if you know what I mean by that, because then I would be unable to recognize my own personal need. But I remember a time when I thought it was happening right in front of my eyes, when we saw an unbelievable thing happen. It was a great missile going off into the sky, and for a minute it looked like it was coming for us. We were up at 39,000 feet in the blackness of night in a Falcon one time, and they had shot a missile out of Vandenberg up into space, and all of a sudden, blossoming in front of our eyes in the blackness of night, was this giant thing that looked like a huge rocket or a giant astral body of some kind coming toward us. Looked like it was going to absorb us. Must have been 100 miles wide. And what it was a missile going the opposite direction. Tens of thousands of miles an hour, and its heat and emissions of moisture and so on vaporizing into a huge cloud and the sun shining on it, and it was an unbelievable experience. And I really did think some strange thoughts right then. I thought, it's him. And I thought, it's really happening. It's here. And I also thought to myself, and I'm not ready. And then I thought, well, no, it can't be, because there's Europe and the Middle East and all this, and I don't know. A lot of thoughts went through my mind real quickly there. But it was almost like a vision of what that is going to be like when the heavens are rolled back and all of a sudden you're going to learn that you might live on a round earth, all right, but there is a God up there, and he's real and he's literal, and he's going to walk back down to this earth in one of these days in our lifetime, in our age. Now, I know all those people thought Christ was going to come back during the Black Death and the 1,000 years and the American Revolutionary War and World War I and World War II. And so we can kid ourselves and say, therefore, is never going to come. But no, you know too much about the world in which you live today to gamble on a statement like that. These are the last of the last days, and they are speeding by. We need an awakening. We need to be alert, awake, and aware. So keep those 3 A's in your mind, and don't go to sleep on the job. But in your hearts, want that kingdom to come. Don't want God to put it off.
Gardener Ted Armstrong invites you to learn more about these important issues through the pages of Plain Truth. Every month, correspondents from around the world explain seemingly unrelated events and bring you the good news beyond. Plain Truth. Your subscription is free of charge. There's no cost or obligation. Plain Truth. You have heard The World Tomorrow with Gardener Ted Armstrong. Sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Gardener Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.